turning our attention now to owls and maybe some other birds as well. And you know what? I'm looking at an owl right now, and I'm also looking at another being here in the studio with me, Laura Erickson of Duluth, Minnesota, the author of 101 Ways to Help Birds, published by Stackpole Books. Laura is an ornithologist, a licensed wild bird rehabilitator, longtime conservationist, and she's also the author of For the Birds, An Uncommon Guide, and Sharing the Wonders of Birds with Kids. That was published in 1992 by Pfeiffer Hamilton and the University of Minnesota Press. Always fun to have her along. We welcome her back to the studio. And certainly, if you have some questions as we talk owls and birds with her, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Laura, welcome. And you brought a guest.
Yeah, I brought my education screech owl, Archimedes. We're headed to St. James School, where I used to be a teacher, after this. So he wanted to come and meet the kids.
Well, I tell you what, he's a beautiful bird. And you and I are going to be on the same docket tonight.
Right.
For the Madison Audubon's annual banquet and raffle. And are you going to bring Archimedes to that as well?
Yeah, our topic tonight is owls, and since that's the only topic about which he's the least bit acquainted, he's not. I won't say he's conversant in it because he will not vocalize in front of people.
He won't.
Except me. At home, owls have two different calls. They have a trill, which sounds a little bit like a toad, only with a little more body, and they have a whinny. And if he makes the trill call and I mimic it back, he shuts up. But if he makes the whinny call and I whinny back, then he'll go back and forth and we can go for an hour. But the only way anyone in my family has heard him make his calls is if they're outside the room listening in, because he will not make it if anybody's looking at him.
Now, why do you suppose that's the case?
I have no idea. But really, when you look at us, I think the reason owls are so fascinating to people is because of all the birds, they're the ones with the flat face that's rather human-like in its shape. Their eyes are situated forward, unlike most birds where the eyes are more on the sides of their face. And so they have this sort of avuncular look, as far as many mythologies and folklore around the world have owls being wise and wonderful. But many folklores have them being ominous, portending death and things. And I think part of that is wrapped in their yellow eyes that many of them have. And even like Archimedes is an eastern screech owl, so he has these feather tufts. And that enhances this cat-like appearance.
Yeah.
And folklores also have cats being very ominous creatures of the dark.
But he's a beautiful bird. Another thing I think about owls, especially an owl like a screech owl, he's a small owl. Probably pigeon size, would you say?
Oh, he's smaller than a pigeon and much lighter than a pigeon.
Yeah, they look heavier because of all of their fine feathers, but those large eyes.
Yeah, a great horned owl's eyes are fully as heavy as an adult human's eyes. They're huge, and they actually are much more discriminating than our eyes. They have like an order of magnitude more rods and cones per square millimeter of retina than we do. And they do have cones as well as rods, so that tells us that they can see colors as well as black and white.
Well, he's a beautiful bird. Now, how long will a screech owl normally live?
It's comparable to pet dogs or cats. And I've had him for 7 years. He's 8 years old. He was a year old when I got him. He came from Ohio, from a rehab center there.
So he's probably about halfway through his life, maybe.
Oh, I'm hoping that he's going to break all the records.
I would bet. And how did you happen to come by Archimedes?
Well, I was giving the banquet speech at a bird festival in Sandusky, Ohio. And a rehabber there, after my talk, I was signing books, and she was just talking to me. And I And my talk was about owls, and I'm often asked to talk about owls because I happen to be the American Ornithologist Union's bird calling contest winner in the repertoire category for my owl calls, so people want me to talk about owls. But I was saying it would be so nice to have an education owl for these programs, and that I had the federal and state licenses to have an owl, but I'd never been able to. I didn't want or have the facilities for a large owl, so I wanted, and my license would only allow a saw-whet, boreal, or screech owl. Well, her face lit up because she had had him for like 50 or 51 weeks. And at the end of 1 year, she's required to have disposed of the owl properly, either by euthanizing it, releasing it to the wild, and she tried to release him, but he was too imprinted on humans, or place them with an educational or research facility that had a license for it. And in Ohio, where so many people find screech owls in their backyards and stuff, everybody who had a license for a screech owl
had
what they needed. So she just lit up. So then I had to bring him home. And this was totally unanticipated. First, I had to call my husband, who had to find my permits and fax them to me.
Oh,
because I
sure.
needed to have them for
have
her
to prove it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, my file drawers are organized taxonomically rather than alphabetically. So he had a bit of a situation trying to find my permits, but he figured it out. And then I had to make arrangements with Northwest Airlines to fly home with an owl. And I had him in a cardboard box, and there was a dead mouse in there, so it did constitute carry-on luggage. And we had to go through the metal detector. I showed him that he had wings, so he was clearly not armed, but they made him go through that too, but he didn't have to go through the x-ray.
and the rest is history.
Yeah. That night, I was really scared about taking him on the plane because that was going to be really frightening for him. And owls mate for life. And one of the things they do that kind of switches off their killer instinct with their families, because they have to be killers, and screech owls will eat other screech owls. And so he would be scared that I was going to eat him, because my face is shaped like an owl's face from his perspective, and a much bigger owl. And I think that's why they're quiet in front of other people, too. But so I had to, like, preen him and bring him close to my face and trust that he would preen me, and he did. He would preen my hair and stuff. And we spent some time that night bonding so he would feel safe on a plane with me the next day.
That's a wonderful story. Nick in Green Bay will give you a chance. Hi, Nick. Thanks for calling. Nick, are you there? Am I doing something? Oh, I sure did do something. Nick, hello. Well, by golly. I don't know what's going on here. Seem to have lost him. Let's see. Oh, I guess we don't have him. If you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890. Talking with Laura Erickson today. We're zeroing in a bit on owls, but talking other birds as well. Give us a call if you have a question or comment. Again, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Owls are more active in the evening than they are during the daylight, but
most species. Archimedes, little owls in particular, have to be pretty nocturnal, because their eyes are like a signal to chickadees that want to chase them away, because screech owls would eat a chickadee. And so if chickadees notice them, they'll start swearing, and that'll alert the bigger birds. And robins are vicious if they see a little owl, and crows could easily kill them. So little owls tend to be cavity nesters and cavity roosters. And if they're in their own area where they know where there's a tree with a hole in it, they're sure to be in it. Just like people and other animals, though, they manufacture their own vitamin D, and that requires sunlight. And that's why so often when the sun's shining on a tree with a cavity, screech owls will poke their heads out, because they are using that sunlight to make vitamin D. But if anything big notices them, they pull their head in, and things just see that dark entrance, and so they leave them alone.
Harry in Iowa County, let's go to you now. Hi, Harry. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just wondering, is there anything that landowners can do? We live in rural Iowa County, and I've heard owls, seen them once or twice occasionally. But is there anything we can do as landowners to promote their activity or encourage them to roost or stay? Or
sure.
Yeah, there's a great book. Screech owls can be attracted to live in a wood duck house or a house even more closely designed for screech owls, though it doesn't take much. Plans for those are in Woodworking for Wildlife, a book by Carol Henderson. Even more important, though, is to provide the right kind of habitat for your owls. No owls that live in Wisconsin build their own nests. A great horned owl would nest in an old abandoned red-tailed hawk nest, or an osprey nest or something like that. Barred owls will nest in a barred owl box that you can make specifically for them, or in a huge tree cavity, and sometimes in a snag where a tree's been broken off. And so they really like old trees. Screech owls nest usually in old flicker or pileated woodpecker nest cavities. Oh. And so when you have good hardwood old trees, that really encourages them. Using anything that will disrupt a natural rodent population will make owls avoid it, because that's their main food.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks for calling. And Tom in northern Wisconsin. Hi to you, Tom.
Good, and you?
Doing great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good. I had a question about a particular owl. It was a soft, wet owl, I do believe.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the fall, and we'd be making the campfire outside. I live in a forest, you know, and there's a lot of dead popple trees around. And this owl must have been twitterpated or something, because it was making a insistent monotonal call constantly. Yep, it was constant all night long. As soon, I'd say starting about 7:30 in the afternoon or evening, and it'd go all night long. You couldn't even have your windows open, and it was very loud. So I tried to figure out where it was coming from, and every time that I got close, it shut up. So what I did is I just laid on the ground with a blanket, and until I could kind of pinpoint where it was coming from, and then I saw it fly in a hollow popple tree. And I looked it up on the internet, and I think it was a soft, wet owl.
Right.
But it did that for almost 2 weeks.
Now, that was in the fall, though?
Yes, that was in the fall.
It's exceptional that they do that kind of vocalizing in fall. We usually hear them starting in March and in April, and many of them will call well into the nesting part of their time. That distinguishes them from boreal owls, which as soon, they're like little real estate agents, and as soon as they attract a mate into their cavity, they shut up for the rest of the season. They're done advertising. But sawhets, I've gotten calls a lot from people who are like camping out in the wilderness, like in the boundary waters, and they wake up in the middle of the night in their tent, and they think a truck is going to back into them.
Well, I tell you what, we'll talk some more about saw-whet owls and all other kinds of owls as well with Laura Erickson here on the Ideas Network. We're talking owls today with Laura Erickson of Duluth, Minnesota, the author of 101 Ways to Help Birds. It's published by Stackpole Books. Laura is, of course, an ornithologist and licensed and wild bird rehabilitator, longtime conservationist, and certainly, as if you've been listening to her talk, you know that she knows a lot about owls and birds of all kinds, as a matter of fact. We're zeroing in a little bit today on owls, and I know we have calls about owls that are in the Wisconsin area. There was a comment from somebody about an owl on a plane. We've got Verdell in Milwaukee might have a little story about her son and a screech owl. I have some questions as well. Can real owls be happy in cages? I wonder about that. I also wonder about what the Harry Potter books, what influence those have had on owls. And we'll find out all that right after this look at the news. Stay with us. We have owls on our mind right now as we visit with Laura Erickson, Larry Mueller here. I'm glad you tuned in today. Laura is a wonderful naturalist, ornithologist, the author of 101 Ways to Help Birds, published just this past year by Stackpole Books. We're so happy to have her with us today. And she brought along Archimedes. Archimedes is her screech owl, and he is the most wonderfully docile. I don't know if docile is the right word, but he's just such a nice visitor. He doesn't say anything. He looks very calm and collected.
Yeah, he finds the world kind of interesting. He's imprinted on humans, and that was why he could. They actually tried to release him twice, and he landed on people in the woods. And when they would bring him back to the rehab center, he actually was heavier than when they released him. So they know he was hunting successfully. He was just naturally drawn to people because he had been so sick and such a little baby when he was originally cared for that he just became imprinted. But so, yeah, he's very calm and comfortable and collected. At home, he has a huge cage that's about half the size of the studio, so he can really get around and move. Here, he is, you know, when I'm traveling with him, he's in a little pet carrier, which he does not. Well, he'll fly right in there when we're done, because then that means he's done performing, and that this is his job. This is what he's actually licensed to do by the federal government. Is to perform, to teach people about owls. But he is very calm. One of the things that annoys me, you were talking about the Harry Potter movies, and Harry's often carrying Hedwig, which is a huge snowy owl, though they always use male actors to play Hedwig, even though Hedwig is supposed to be a female. They use males for two different reasons. First, because male owls and other birds of prey, almost all species, are much smaller and more docile than the females. Females are just much more aggressive and assertive and heavier, so it'd be hard for a 10-year-old boy to have them on his arm. But they're feistier. There's no such word as macho in the world of birds of prey. It's macha. But also with snowy owls, the male is pure white as they become adults, where the females still have a lot of black. And that just looks ever so much more dramatic against a wizard's hood and cloak. So that's why they choose a male actor. But they often show Harry carrying him in this little round cage where he couldn't possibly open his wings or anything. That's like the pet carrier. It's just for transport. It's illegal in the United States to have pet owls, but in Great Britain, people are still allowed to have them as pets, but they have strong regulations about how large their cage can be. They have to have enough room to spread their wings and do a little flying. So that's just a movie thing.
All in all, do you think the Potter books have helped or hurt owls?
It's a mixed bag. In the United States, where it's clearly illegal to have pet owls, it hasn't been as bad as in England, where people are allowed to have pet owls, as far as this sort of craze to get a pet owl. People don't realize they need animal food, and they need not just meat, but they need to have the bones and fur go through their digestive system so they can have something to pack into that pellet that they regurgitate. And without that, they start getting various digestive tract infections and things. So it's...
you got to feed them mice then.
And owls have very, shall we say, odoriferous droppings because they have cica in their intestines and they have this bacteria that is exceptionally smelly. So they don't make the... You know, Archimedes seems so calm and collected here, and he really is. But he needs space. He needs to feel like an owl. At nighttime when I'm in my office, I often open the cage door and he can fly in the whole huge room. And he's very often drawn to the back of my chair or my shoulder, which means I can't wear very good clothes in there. But he is delightful, but he takes a lot of work and a lot of commitment. And that's part of the reason why it's illegal to possess a wild bird in captivity.
Yeah. You know, our caller just before the break had talked about saw-whets, and we were just kind of sort of concluding, this is kind of the nesting season now, not only for saw-whets, but
But yep. for other owls, great horned owls start calling in late January or February normally around here. Barred owls kind of hold off a little bit, but they're starting to call too now. And saw-whets and screech owls are calling. Part of it, they nest early. Female owls start incubating when they lay their first eggs, so, and the male does the hunting, so the eggs can stay warm even in February. That means that when there's a lot of animals, as the snow's melting and they're starting to need to hunt for their babies, there's enough food. And as the babies are growing, there's a growing amount of food. And then when the little stupid babies are first mm-hmm. practicing hunting, there's lots of stupid baby animals for them to practice on. So,
Well, I tell you what, we should get to the phones here. And Verdell in Milwaukee's been patiently waiting, so let's go there. Verdell, hi. Thank you for waiting.
I have a great story about a screech owl. My son and his friend were coming home when they were about 12 years old along the river. We live close to the Milwaukee River here. And he came home with an owl that had fallen out of its nest. It hadn't learned how to fly or anything. And I said, Rick, I don't know what to do or what to feed him. So we called, I think it was the Humane Society or someplace, and they said, buy frozen horse meat, and we defrosted that. And one thing it did, we called him Oliver. My husband made a perch for him across the corner of the kitchen, and we let him out of the cage. He couldn't fly, but we let him out of the cage, and my daughter played piano, and we had an upright piano. And so he made my husband made a little cage for him, and he could go in and out of that. And he'd sit in that cage while she practiced, and he'd screech a little. But, oh, it was a delightful way of a child learning respect for animal, because he in the morning, Rick in the morning, had to take a little piece of this horse meat, frozen and defrosted, and he had to put it into the owl's mouth, and that's how the owl ate. We had him for 3 years, and we loved him so much. It was a great source of teaching children, not that we liked doing this for the owl, but he probably would have died had he not, been able to be found. Mm-hmm. So it taught my son, and he ended up working for the Department of Natural Resources for all his life until he retired recently. But
it was a great story.
Yeah, a lot of people have learned a lot of their connections with wildlife as, with their childhood experiences. Now there's really strict regulations about taking care of owls. And unlike back then, there are a lot of places where they, have facilities in Milwaukee, the Humane Society now. Scott Dial is just an incredible, an incredibly knowledgeable wildlife rehabber. So children nowadays don't get those same experiences of a generation ago, which in some ways is a loss, but it's probably in the long run better for the animals themselves. But it's so interesting that the stories that I hear from these close connections, we talk about annual animal populations and how important they are, but it doesn't really come home in most people until it's contact with one individual that ignites their passion to, start working for the DNR or for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or become an ornithologist.
Thank you very much, Verdell. Appreciate it. I want to give some others a chance to go on air here. Susan's been waiting a long time from Coon Valley. Susan, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Afternoon, actually, no.
You're right. First of all, I want to thank your guest for sharing the information, because I think just owls are a phenomenal bird. We live in an area where there are lots of owls. And if anybody wants a hobby in the evenings now, you can go out and you can start hearing them. And you can hear this, who cooks for you, who cooks for you, over and over and over. And it's really fun to go out and start calling. I can get anywhere from 6 to 10 owls hooting back and forth, and occasionally I can call one into a soft maple that sits down in our by our barn, and it's probably about maybe 50 yards from the door. And of course, you don't hear them come in because they're so silent. But occasionally, just right before it gets dark, there will be one that'll fly down, and they can make such a racket. mm-hmm. when they start calling. It's phenomenal, but it's just a comment. It's just a fun thing to do. Thank you.
Sometimes you do have to be careful. I taught an elder hostel once where a woman told me that her husband was going out back and every night calling, and a barred owl was answering him. And this went on for a couple months. And then she and a friend were talking in the grocery store who lived on the next, and her friend lived on the next block. And she was saying every night her husband was going out and calling, and a barred owl was calling back to him. And it turned out they were talking to each other. And it is a little important. Sometimes when I take groups out, I do owl prowls and do a lot of hooting and to bring in an owl for my group to see. But it's... not a good idea to do it too much, especially when you live in the same place, so you're calling the same owls over and over. Sometimes they figure it out pretty quick, but especially if you're talented at it and you're tricking them, it can put more of their energy into declaring their territory than doing the other things they need to do. But it is such a thrill when you make that call and you do it well enough that the bird calls back to you. It's really a joy.
Thanks, Susan. And Mike in Castle Rock, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I grew up in northern Ohio, and I contributed to a publication that I'm looking at here. It says The Screech Owl, Its Life, Histories, and Population Ecology in Northern Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to tell you was this. One year about this, or actually it was a little later on in the year, I was banding great horned owls, and I found a small wood plot with two great horned owls in. And there was also a nest of long-eared owls. And I didn't think that they would nest very close together. I found sharpshin and Cooper's hawks carcasses in the owls' nests. And I wondered if you'd come across anything like that.
I haven't seen I've never lived anywhere near where long-eared owls are nesting. The great horned owl would think cool if something that's potentially going to provide food is living there. But sometimes birds can get along pretty well if their habits are different. And long-eared owl vocalizations are not in the high-pitched frequencies that are especially appealing to great horned owls while they're hunting. And the long-eared owls are very silent at night. So I don't think... while they're hunting. So I don't think that it would be too likely that a great horned owl would eat one of them compared to things that are higher pitched. And you know, if a great horned owl is paying attention to where the noisy neighborhood hawks are going at night, then he'll just drop in on them and they're visit them unexpectedly, where he can't do that to the long-eared owl.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. By the way, if you'd like to join in, we finally have some open lines again. We can get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, talking with Laura Erickson today about owls. Give us a call. Bob in Gilman is next. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I love your program.
Thank you.
I just had we had a snowy owl here in the area for about 3 weeks. He was sitting on telephone pole, and he posed for lots of pictures, so I got quite a few pictures of him. But I didn't hear anything about there being a rough winter up in Canada or anything. I was just wondering, is there a possibility that this owl might stick around and they might make a nest or not?
It's pretty unlikely. The latest I know one sticking around in Wisconsin was when there was one near Manitouish Waters a couple springs ago that stuck around long enough for the Discovery Center's birding festival in May, but it disappeared the day after the festival was over. But that one had stayed in the marshes there, and then it just must have moved back north.
Okay.
This was not an invasion year. So, you know, individual snowy owls can migrate now and then, even when there isn't a big harsh winter. They often are immature birds that just don't know how to compete for their own little territory and just kind of end up moving. Snowy owls are interesting, though, because they're a tundra bird. And with the permafrost, there are no trees like our elm trees and maple trees and stuff where they ever sit anywhere where there's branches over their heads. So when they come down here, it's extremely rare to find one sitting anywhere where there's branches above it. But they do like high perches, so they will love.
He seemed to enjoy the telephone pole.
Exactly.
Yep.
And rooftops. And sometimes they light on chimneys. They're so close to the North Pole, but they never talk to Santa Claus about the
chimney.
about how chimneys work. And so sometimes they actually do fall down chimneys.
This one was almost pure white. It just had a few flecks of black. Would that be a male or a female, do you think?
It would be more likely that it was an adult male, maybe not quite as full maximum years yet, so he still has some of the dark flecks. But as they molt their feathers, the new feathers that come in are whiter and whiter as they get older.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks very much for calling. And if you're near your computer, I hope you will go to our website, WPR.org, and Al Reland, our engineer, came in and took some photos, digital photos, of Laura with Archimedes, and they are now up online on our website. So while you're listening, you take a look at Laura and take a look at Archimedes. That's wonderful. Al Reland, thank you for doing that. That's wonderful. So it's WPR.org. You'll find that picture. Gary in St. Cloud, Minnesota, you are next. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I'm wondering, is there any owls that are natural predators to pocket gophers? I have pocket gophers in my meadows, and it's really difficult. They can really make havoc in the meadow, and I'm looking for a natural control for pocket gophers.
Well, you're too far north for barn owls, but a lot of owls that hunt in the open areas, like short-eared owls, would be predators of them. The trick is inviting them in.
Yeah.
The great gray owl is very specific to meadow voles. Most great gray owls, over 90% of their food is just Microtus, and it's just meadow voles. But pocket gophers, the one time I found an injured barn owl, what it had been carrying it when it got caught on a barbed wire fence was a pocket gopher.
Oh, interesting. So there's got to be some way to,
diurnal, like red-tailed hawks and things will eat them too. It's so tricky coming up with a good balance, especially because so many places aren't looking for a good balance and things get thrown out of, get skewed. But yeah, that's an issue.
Thanks, Gary. Joel in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Joel.
Hi, good afternoon. I got a two-part question. They're kind of related. Oddly enough, I was watching an old John Wayne movie the other day, and they made reference to eating owl stew, and I thought that was awfully strange. And I was wondering if they actually did use owls as a food source, and does that lead to their natural decline and how their numbers are coming back now in Wisconsin?
Owls have been, people have eaten whatever they could of the natural world. Owls don't taste particularly good. They don't taste like chicken because they don't eat the kinds of food that chickens eat. They eat animal food, and most predator animals don't have as flavorful meat as animals that eat plant food. So, but people probably did eat what they could. Owls, for their size, don't have a lot of meat. And although owls have been persecuted by people, and there have even been places that have had bounties on great horned owls and things, it was never hunting for food. But it is possible that they were, back then might have had what they called owl stew. Though even if they called it owl stew, it probably had like crows and stuff in it as well as owls.
Okay. And Reed in Clintonville, hi to you.
Good afternoon. Say, just a quick story I'd like to relate, and that is last summer, we walked out and back here, and in our neighbor's maple in the backyard, there were 13 of these little tiny gray owls sitting all over in the tree, and they were there for the entire day. Most of them stayed in their original places, but a few moved around from here and there to, from one part of the tree to the other. And later in the day, we walked out, and they were all gone.
Wow. And they were they screech owls?
Yes.
What time of year?
Oh, gosh. It was, I don't know, it was a warm, beautiful day. It was, you know, a regular summer day.
Yeah, they were probably baby screech owls.
That yes, were I think they were baby
yeah.
screech
so
owls.
So they'd be fuzzier than the adults. And, and yeah.
They appeared that way.
But, yeah, the babies, when they fledge, that's one thing people have to be very, very careful about. Because when owls fledge, meaning they first leave their hole or their nest,
right.
They can't fly yet. They're just like human toddlers that learn how to get out of the crib before they're very good at walking or running. And a lot of times people think they're orphaned and try to rescue them because they can't fly yet, when they really have parents who are looking out for them, but the parents are hiding out for the day and feed them at night and everything. And these are called branchers. If one's on the ground and it might get hit by a lawnmower or hurt by a cat, it's not a bad idea to pick it up and put it in a tree. But we don't need to rescue them. They know what to
right.
do.
Right. Well, we didn't try to touch them or anything, just took pictures.
But what a cool thing to see yep. them the day they fledge.
It was amazing. Thank you.
Thanks. Sure. Thanks very much for calling. And you're giving Archimedes a little water with your finger.
Yeah, he takes it when it's dripping. He can sense it with what are called rictal bristles. They're like whiskers on a cat, and they're very sensitive. And when I dribble it, he'll open his beak sideways and take it in. And I can always tell when he's thirsty because he'll very gently nibble on my thumb, and I know that he wants a little water, like he's doing right now.
Like he's doing right now. And I, frankly, just went online myself to WPR.org, and there you are with Archimedes, right on our main page. So,
is he your first screech owl guest on the program?
He is my first screech owl guest. I have had a llama in the studio, and now I have had an owl. And I think... And I've had dogs come in from time to time as well, but he's definitely my first owl and the calmest of
yeah,
all of the...
He's very calm.
Very, very, very calm.
He likes your programs, and so he's used to your voice, actually.
Laura, you're a peach. Thank you so much for being with us today. Hey, it's going to be a lot of fun tonight at the Madison Audubon Banquet. I know that.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to it.
I am as well, and I really appreciate you being with us today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Laura Erickson of Duluth, Minnesota. Take a look at her books. She's got her book from last year is titled 101 Ways to Help Birds. It's published by Stackpole, and she also has For the Birds, an Uncommon Guide, and Sharing the Wonders of Birds with Kids, and another great book. And so I hope you'll look those books up and go online. Take a look at Laura with Archimedes. And thank you all for listening, and please do stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.